Only three matches remain for Orange County to earn a spot in the playoffs and extend the season for their fans. They're close, but they got to do a little bit more work. It starts this week. Two big matches that we're going to see in there. We're going to talk about that, plus much more. Oh, and come on, you Spurs. Welcome to the Podcast of Champions. This is the Orange and Black Soccer Cast.
This is the Orange and Black Soccer Cast, the first and only podcast dedicated to Orange County Soccer Club, its fans, and supporters. Follow us on Twitter at @OCSC_SoccerCast or on Facebook at Orange and Black Soccer Cast.
How's it going, Orange County? Welcome to another episode of the Orange and Black Soccer Cast, the first and only podcast dedicated to Orange County Soccer Club, its fans, and supporters. I'm your host, Ray Samora. I'm here to take you through this journey as we discuss all things Orange County Soccer Club. Helping me out this week, first, let's bring him here. The man, the legend, Dylan, original member of this team. It was really originally me, Dylan, and the cricket, if you hear the cricket in the background. But let's ignore the cricket. Dylan, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little disappointed that you don't consider me to be myth or myth-worthy or mythical, I suppose. But the less you talk about a certain team from North London this episode, the happier everyone's going to be. So this is just your one and only reminder about that.
Who says I'm here to make people happy? I mean, y'all have learned by now that I don't care what anyone else thinks about me. Also helping me, someone that probably isn't a friend of Dylan right now after this past weekend. That's Mr. Brad in Vegas. How are we doing, Brad?
I'm not. I have nothing against Dylan. I have more against the ownership, the coaching staff of Everton. That has nothing to do with Dylan. But I will give you a friendly reminder that if you're in, that also includes children's soccer. This is your one reminder that I don't know where I'm going with it. Just you're predictable.
But who knew that this was going to be a Premier League conversation to start the podcast? We have one other person here helping us out today, and that's Mr. Greg. Greg, welcome to the show. First time. We're glad to have you on.
Hello. Glad to be here. Yeah. Wish we came out with 6 points instead of the one, but yeah. Glad to be here.
Yeah. You know, and share with our listeners that maybe aren't familiar with who you are, Greg. Share with them. Let us know.
Oh, yeah. I just started watching Orange County just this season, actually. I found the team in like January, and I've watched every single game since then. And I had a Ducks account on Instagram, and I changed it to Orange County SC, and that's where CLC invited me to stand with them. And honestly, best fan experience that I've ever had in my life. So couldn't be happier.
That's a big reason why a lot of people become Orange County Soccer Club fans is because of CLC and the work they do and how friendly they are. If you're watching the live video stream or recorded version of the stream, you can see the Instagram page there. So basically, Greg covers, you know, the sports that happen here in Orange County, whether it's Ducks, Orange County Soccer Club, Angels, whatever other interesting things are happening for Orange County sports, which is really cool. It's really cool to have that type of coverage because sometimes Orange County gets pushed aside for the bigger LA market. And unfortunately, we share with LA a lot of stuff. So let's get into some conversation. So really quick, we've got a lot to cover. First and foremost, this past weekend, Orange County traveled out to Phoenix to try and earn a result. And they actually got a result in Phoenix, although maybe a little disappointing that they couldn't hang on to the 1-0 victory. But they still come home with a point. It still helps them in their playoff hopes for this season. But unfortunately, due to other results, there was no clinching of a playoff spot. I know on chats, I'm going to go to you first, Brad, because I just recall what you were talking about behind the scenes before we went on the air. Is some of the chats, you were a little disappointed with Orange County's performance in this match.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I think Orange County was the better team in this game, but towards the end of this game, it was kind of obvious that this team wasn't match ready or fit or something for the full 90 minutes, in my opinion. It just looked like the team was struggling the last, I'd call it, what, 20-ish minutes to keep the pressure away. And, you know, credit to Phoenix. They definitely fought for the goal. They earned the goal. The goal came off an absolute banger of a shot from out in, like, four-point land zone. But Orange County had their opportunities, couldn't finish them, and lost the game as a result. Or felt like a loss after giving up an 84th-minute late goal.
I'd say it wasn't a loss. They still come home with a point, which I think anytime you look at the schedule, if you can come home from Phoenix with at least a point, that is sort of a victory, a moral victory on that. Now, being that we're in this tight playoff race, maybe it's a little more disappointing. Dylan, are you okay or satisfied with a 1-point result away in Phoenix, or are you disappointed that Orange County didn't come home with the full 3 points?
It's disappointing because we were leading, and I think we were the better team. Obviously, we shifted to that back five at the end, and they beat us with a worldie that doesn't go in all that frequently. So disappointed not to get the 3 points, but we were much better than we were last week, and I think that's a lot of what we talked about last week was just, let's forget about it and move on, and try and make it right next weekend. It wasn't perfect, but we limited them. I mean, their chances overall were not ideal, and we limited them to just a few, to quote what our producer brought up. And now, of course, as I say that, I blank it, but it's not bad. It's not bad. It's, oh, yeah, you win home, you draw away, you do what you can.
The old, the old model from Alan Underwood, you know, if you can draw away, win at home, that's a successful result, right?
And against a team like this, that's actually been quite good. And a certain someone who we probably all expected to hear, I'll just say his name, Danny Trejo. And instead, all we heard was Danny Trejo not doing anything, or Danny Trejo being dispossessed. That's exactly what we want to do against a guy that is that hot, is just shut him down. It would have been great if Carlos Harvey was on the field, because that's a walking red card right there. But ultimately, limited the chances and forced them into, and as we watch right now, mostly chances from tight angles, and mostly for some reason Darnell King taking most of those chances. So, yeah, make the fullback shoot, not the strikers.
Maybe it was the wrong Danny Trejo. Maybe it was the other Danny Trejo that suited up for this match, and that's why
he's looking very good and very young. So whatever he's on, I want some of that.
I'm going to go to you, Greg, as we're getting to the point where Orange County scores a goal off a really nice shot from Olasky. What did you think of that shot from Milan?
I thought the setup by McNulty was actually the most impressive part about that play. He, like, back-heeled it to Brian, and Brian lost it a little bit, and with a little bit of luck, the other team just pretty much passed it right to Milan, who just hammered it home. So, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I would assume, right, if your coach is probably telling you, whatever you do defense when you're trying to clear the ball, just don't put it anywhere near Milan Olasky, because he's the one guy that if it gets near his foot, he's actually proven that he can get a quick shot off on target, even if it's a ricochet from the defense or something like that. Let me ask you, Greg, also, how excited was it to hear that Colin Shuttler was back in between the sticks?
Oh, my God. Instead of the other goalkeeper options. Colin's great. Shuttler, with Shuttler back there, it's just like you got Powers and Nakeem. It's like you got a power triangle of just great defense, and you just know that they're going to be composed night in, night out. It's really nice to have that.
Yeah, and Brad, I'll go to you. We have a really good defense. We know that, but it just seems that the defense plays at a different level when they have Shuttler back there and they know they have, you know, their number one keeper between the sticks. Why do you think that is? I know we saw when Santana made his debut, the defense played out of this world and fought really hard to make sure he wasn't put into any bad situations. But for whatever reason, when Shuttler's in there, it's a different looking defense than we have, the other goalkeepers. What is it? Lopez or whatever his name
is.
Yeah,
I think it's I'm forgetting
the name.
Now.
I'm trying to forget the name at this point.
I think it's just familiarity. When you have someone like Shuttler, when you have someone like Santana who knows the system, who's been with the team all year and is familiar with the players and where their strengths are, you're gonna have success when you have someone come in and get minutes immediately. You know, that's where you kind of saw the disconnect. And mind you, I don't think playing Lopez during the game against San Antonio was the smart play, allowing 4 goals, and that was definitely off compared to how the team's been playing. But and we also saw an amazing opportunity, the header that went wide that you see on the screen now. This team got lucky to only allow one and have it be a worldie. There should have been multiple opportunities where goals were allowed this game.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, it wasn't Shuttler's greatest performance, but he did what he had to do in his stuff there. And obviously also when you've been sitting for a few matches, it's difficult to just jump right into the action. That's one thing with goalkeepers is you don't see the rotation in goalkeeper as far as, you know, mid-match, let's bring in the backup to give him some minutes and get him some action, right? It's pretty much you're either on the bench or you're between the posts. So when you get called to go in there and you haven't played for a while, it's hard to get that going again. Typical, we're watching there on the screen just a moment ago, typical Phoenix, Orange County, a little bit of chippy action there, Dylan. What was your thoughts? How would you rate this compared to previous matches between Orange County and Phoenix and the tension, the chippiness, the aggressiveness between the two teams? How would you rate this one?
I believe it was Robbie Kiernan that one time raked his boot down someone's calf. And then there was some pushing and shoving amongst him and Aiden Quinn and a few other guys. This wasn't bad. Milan can consider himself very fortunate to have not been booked very early on for blasting a ball off of another player's face at point blank range. We saw a certain Phoenix player get sent off for doing that last year. This I remarked this on Saturday night, but it just feels like this rivalry doesn't really have the same vitriol that it had a couple of seasons ago. Obviously, both teams have been underperforming in recent memory. I think part of it is there's been a lot of playing staff turnover and, at this point, management turnover at both clubs as well. You kind of had that Shantz-Cloutier matchup for the longest time. Then you've got New Mexico showing up. You've got San Diego showing up, and both of those I think just kind of took away from what was always going to be a contentious thing. Now that being said, if we're both at the top of the table like it was 2018, you'll probably see, you know, even 2019, you'd probably see more matches like that, but just falling flat a little bit these days, and I'm okay with that because we're better than Arizona.
There we go. And we're looking at the standings on the screen, right? We're currently Orange County sitting in fifth after the results from this match. I don't know. Has there been any change since then? I can't recall. There is the game in hand for Orange County with Phoenix, which is helpful there. They're both even on points. So Orange County has the advantage there against Phoenix to at least potentially move into a home playoff match and get one extra home match at minimum for the fans, which would be an amazing thing to have there. Greg, let me get you your overall impressions of this match. Did Orange County meet, underperform, or exceed expectations in your mind for this match?
Honestly, based on our form recently, they met my expectations, but there are positives to draw from this match. I think Bryce Jamison, ever since he's come back from international duty, he's looked extremely confident and comfortable with the ball, just whipping balls in left and right. He's taking shots too. I think Kyle Scott looked really good that game. And aside from the positives, Phoenix really killed us in transition, especially our midfield. And like you guys said, we were lucky to get out of that with a draw. Like, our backline and Akeem and Powers probably held down the line there.
Let's just say this, right? I mean, we've talked about this past. That's the beautiful thing with soccer is it's a very, very finite game where just one thing goes one way or the other. It changes the result. And, you know, we talked about luck. Luck's a big part of this sport. You see it all across the world when it comes to soccer. I know my coworkers are thinking, hey, there's going to be a mention of other teams, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to talk about this. Orange County did what they needed to do. They got the luck in the ways they needed to get the win. They got Phoenix putting some really ugly shots towards goal. And what for a couple of opportunities that either just missed the target or the one that went into the back of the net for Phoenix. I mean, Orange County did what you do. You're going to perform. You're going to do what you can do. You might not perform your best. No team, you look at any sport, no team's going to be the greatest team on the pitch every single match. But as long as you play to the best of your ability on that match and you get some breaks, you hopefully come away with a result. And again, we've talked about in the past, a result on the road, even this late in the season where any point really matters, it's better to come home with that 1 point than to come home with 0 points at this point of the season. We see, again, Orange County sitting at 48 points. The playoff line right now is at 42 points. So not quite clinched. Three matches in hand for a lot of those teams, including Oakland, El Paso, Orange County, San Diego. But third is still an opportunity for Orange County, but they have to perform really well. And for them, it's two matches this week that they have to really, really work, come away with big results. Brad, I'm going to ask you this. What do they need from this, these next two matches? And we'll talk about them individually, but how many points do they need in these next two matches that you need to see from them for a successful week?
Can I take all three matches as a point line, or you just wanted to stick with this week?
You could do all three if you want to. I was just thinking about this particular week.
Yeah.
Well, if we want to go for the last three matches, we could do that. I'm not stuck on this.
So what I'm going to say is Orange County needs 4 points and at least one of those victories to come against either one of Oakland or Monterey Bay. And I'm only saying that because both those teams are at the playoff line. They are the playoff line at 8th and 9th. And if Orange County wants to make the playoffs as a seed that is not 8th, they need to win. They need to win one of those matches, if not both.
That makes sense. And this week it's two home matches. So that's a thing to take into consider, right? It's home against Oakland on Wednesday, home against San Antonio on Saturday for the final home match of the season. And then one last match on the road in Monterey Bay. All these teams are playoff teams. San Antonio is probably, when you're thinking about what they're coming into the match, they have something to play for. They're playing for first place. Sacramento. What's up?
All three teams do have.
Well, no. I was trying to think though, because I was thinking maybe San Antonio doesn't have as much motivation to play well. Maybe they're content with second place. They've already clinched the playoffs. You're looking at though Oakland and Monterey Bay. Those two are basically battling each other for that final playoff spot. I'm more worried about those two teams at this point than I am San Antonio. Is that a wrong way to look at it, Dylan?
I can't believe I'm struggling this much with this question, but I think it's.
I made it hard for Dylan.
I think ultimately, you just kind of ignore what everyone else is doing, and I can't even fathom trying to answer this question because I think it is just down to focusing on what we can do, and you get the points where you can get points, and you try not to worry about. Well, there's 7 points up, but there's three matches left, so we could catch them. Well, they're probably going to get a point or two, you know, even with the match in hand that we've got.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that. You show up, you try and get a result. And we discussed this ad nauseum when the playoffs happen. But you try and get a home.
Sorry. After July, you know, you're disappointed. But if you look back on where we were in April and May, you're ecstatic that we are in this spot where playoff control is in our own destiny. Like, we control our own destiny.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I had this thought last night. It was kind of doom and gloom, and I figured it would be kind of doom and gloom about this match against Phoenix. But 4 months ago, do you think this is a 1-1 draw on the road? And I understand that a week and a half ago, we lost 4-0. Like, it's not ideal, but things have been really bad. Yeah.
I think back when it was poor form, you're excited with a 1-1 draw against Phoenix at this point of the season.
Yeah, and we didn't lose.
That Brad's saying. And with Brad saying, you're in playoff and you're in control of your first-round destiny in the playoffs at this point.
So with that in mind, we control our destiny. And I think that's where it begins and it ends. And you can only do that 90, 95 minutes at a time. And it's just showing up and saying, hey, what do we have to do to beat Monterey? What do we have to do to beat Oakland? And going
so the important part of this is let's focus, you know, the team needs to focus on this Oakland match midweek. It's always tough. It ruins your, you know, your typical training session routines and all that stuff, a midweek match. But I'll ask you, Greg, are you at all worried that Orange County, although we know Oakland's coming to this with something to fight for, right? Are we at all worried that maybe the team looks ahead past this in looking more at revenge for San Antonio? Or are you confident that the club goes into this Oakland match focused on Oakland, not even worried about San Antonio until after this match? What do you think, Greg?
He's pulled a Brad.
Oops, my bad. I think the players themselves focus on a game-to-game basis. They just want to win the next game, take a step-by-step process throughout the season. Looking ahead towards San Antonio wouldn't really do us much good. I feel like just focusing on Oakland would probably be what our players are doing right now. So,
well, and let me ask you, Greg, which of these two opponents? I mean, San Antonio obviously is higher up on the table. They've proven themselves to be the better team all season long. Oakland is battling for that final, you know, seventh or eighth playoff spot. You know, which one worries you more this week? Is it Oakland that's going to be the scarier opponent, or San Antonio in your mind?
Honestly, even though San Antonio is higher on the table and they did beat us pretty badly a week and a half ago, I'd say the Oakland match scares me a little bit more, because looking at their form, they haven't had much success recently, and they're going to be trying as hard as they can to stay in that playoff spot. So you're going to expect a tough game from them.
Yeah, I'm sort of on your side with that, Greg. I'm more worried about that Oakland match. And it's not just strictly with, you know, they're just going to be out there trying to win harder. I'm worried. I mean, this is sort of like at the point for them. This is do or die for those teams in the, you know, eighth, ninth, and tenth spot. You need to win. You need to pull out whatever you can to get a win. I'm worried about, you may, there's going to be a little bit more scrappiness from Oakland, and then maybe even that final match of the season against Monterey Bay. And we all know what happens when there's a scrappiness. There's going to be some dangerous tackles. There's going to be some dangerous collisions potentially. That's what scares me most against the matches against Oakland and Monterey Bay coming up. I think San Antonio, it's going to be more of a clean match. I think San Antonio, honestly, I think they are comfortable. If they finish in second, I think they're happy with that coming up. Obviously, it's out of their hands, because if Sacramento wins out, they're not going to have a shot at first. But I think San Antonio would be fine being at that number two spot heading into the playoffs, as long as they can stay healthy and as long as they can, you know, get some decent results or decent performances from their teams. It's those teams at the bottom that are scrapping. Brad, what should we be worried about Oakland heading into this match? Have you checked out Oakland at all recently? I know you've watched some of their matches.
Not super recently. But I mean, Oakland's always been a good team. I think right now they are slightly scarier than Monterey Bay. Monterey Bay, if you remember, started off very strong before having a miserable time after that July 1st game versus us. Oakland, I feel, has had the reverse trajectory, where they started off strong, had their lull point, but now we're catching them and they're playing really well again. Someone remind me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Oakland is on some sort of winning streak right now, or a non-losing streak, or at least up until recently.
Well, they did draw at the weekend, and they also
drew against Monterey Bay. They lost to Tulsa.
They're not doing great, Brad. Unfortunately, you are right.
They haven't lost one in five games.
I will be wrong.
They lost to Tulsa, and before that, they lost to Vegas. And then before that, they lost to Sacramento, and before that, they lost to Louisville City.
I will
imagine losing to Sacramento.
Imagine I just said everything I just said in reverse, where I said that Oakland's on a losing streak and they're currently in their lull. Yeah, imagine I said that. I don't know who I was referring to earlier, but it was not Oakland.
It's all good, Brad. It's not like this is like recorded forever for people to hear how big of a mistake you made.
It's okay. It's not like anybody actually tuned in after Ray's intro. Like, no one's listening to this podcast. The show from no that one's is heard what
you're
this.
Saying, Dylan.
Yeah.
Is there anything about Oakland that it scares you, Dylan? Besides the fact that they're going to be battling for playoff position, is really that's the biggest threat right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're acting like they have more to play for than us, but I don't think that's necessarily true. They'll obviously want to make the playoffs. Every team obviously wants to win every single game, but I think part of it is that, like, Blanchett is one of the league leaders in saves. Typically, when that happens, teams are a little less defensively oriented, and I worry about us maybe just getting caught in possession and maybe conceding on the counter. So ideally, you know, we hit them for a couple early or something, and we can kind of just sit back and force them to be open. But yeah, I think most of my worry is just about maybe playing down to their level. And I say that with as much respect as I can muster here. I think they're a good team. I just think we tend to make things as hard as possible for whatever reason. Now is not the time to be doing that. I mean, this is a time to score a goal or two and just try and see out a match, which is what we almost did in Phoenix.
So producer Andy threw a question into the chats. And the real question, which team does USL headquarters want to win this match? Oakland versus Orange County.
Well, one of these brands, sorry, did I say brand? Oh, well, there's my answer.
All right. Let me go to you, Greg. What do you think, what do we need to see out of Orange County to, maybe in the first 15, 20 minutes to be confident that they're going to come away with full 3 points in this match against, Oakland?
I mean, an early goal is always nice. Stopping Johnny Rodriguez, that would be a good start too. I see he's their top scorer this year. He's got 12 goals. And just overall, having confidence in the way you play. Recently, we haven't had a very good buildup. It's been kind of incohesive. So fixing that would be nice. And yeah, again, just getting an early goal would be perfect. Maybe even two.
It'd be beautiful if we can get back to the Kyle Scott, Kevin Partita sort of dominance in the midfield that we saw during that run. When they were on that nice winning streak or unbeaten streak, because those two were a big, big part of why the team was so successful during that run. I think with some injuries or some potential sittings or benchings because of yellow card accumulation or worries about that, or maybe even, you know, just rotation there, I think that consistency that was happening in that midfield sort of suffered a little bit, and it's been noticeable. Like you said, Greg, you know, and I think it was Brad was talking about, one of you were talking about the midfield sort of collapse this match, or lack of dominance that Phoenix was sort of dominating that midfield. That was Greg. Sorry, Greg. I was giving the credit to Brad there.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm hoping we can see in these final three matches, right? We need to see who are going to be our 11 and let's get their confidence back. Let's get their, what they were doing during that run back, and it's going to have to start against this Oakland match. It's, again, tough match against Oakland. But I guess, yeah, was it you, Dylan, like that said? I mean, it's not like we don't have anything to play for. So let's get into some predictions really quick, and then we'll talk about San Antonio a little bit more. So those that don't know, we do our prediction match and our prediction game for the season, and although she hasn't been on our show for a while, Taylor is sort of just dominating that, at least for us on the podcast. I know we got some fans that are doing really well on it as well. Brad, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor's consistently getting her picks in, unlike some of my fellow co-hosts. Shout out to Ray and Dylan. One perfect score, 1-1 draw with a Milan Alaski goal. That was Logan this past week, who I believe is close to catching up with the rest of the competition. Yeah, still Kayvon's in first, Haggis slightly behind, but Logan with 5 points definitely did a good catching up this past weekend.
And we mentioned Logan, so I think like GM Logan or whatever he is now, right? He's actually like making some soccer moves in the soccer world. So congrats to you, Logan, for whatever you're doing. I believe it's with LA Force or something like that. I don't know. Dylan, you might know more about it.
Yeah, he's with LA Force. And I think the better question is to ask, what is he not doing? And I think he's doing just about everything besides playing. So,
I mean, hey. We all know Logan is just someone that is ruthless in getting insider information throughout the USL Championship. I think there's a lot of people that saw this potential in him, that this might be something that he can do. And again, congratulations, Logan. I know you were excited that, you know, you're getting this opportunity. Hopefully it works well for you, and it leads to bigger and better things. And maybe that's why he tends to do good on this game prediction thing, because I think annually he's one of the better performers on this, so he actually seems to know a little bit more than we do. Let's talk about predictions for this match. So for those that haven't followed us or don't know, we do predictions. There's a random weird scoring system that Brad created for this to
I feel like it's not that arbitrary or weird.
If anything,
and I'll give credit, there's one thing that people don't like about it, and that's the fact that you have to choose the first goal scorer.
So the fun thing is I'm on the form right now, and it's giving me the option to predict the Phoenix Rising match. So I think I'm going to go change my score for that one so I can get some better points on that. Brad's going to go lock it up now, I bet you. So let's talk about this. Let's get predictions for the Oakland Roots match on Wednesday. Again, score line, and if Orange County scores, who the first goal scorer is. I'll go to you first, Dylan.
1-0, Milan Alaski.
What about you, Brad?
2-2, Milan Alaski.
Oh, come on, you guys got to gamble a little bit more. Why do you have to pick Milan Alaski for everything? Greg, what's your prediction for this match?
I'm going to go 1-0 late goal by Mark McNulty.
All right. I'm going to go, and I don't think I mentioned this on the show yet, but before we went live, I sort of figured out why the team has been struggling, and it's because I haven't been drinking a particular drink since prior to the Vegas match while we're on this show, which was my Plantation 20-year rum. I'm trying to hold it up to make sure y'all can see it. So I'm going to go a 2-0 score line in honor of the Plantation 20-year rum, Orange County. And I'm going to agree with Greg. Mark McNulty gets that first goal. And when Orange County wins this match, you can thank me for going back and drinking that. But hopefully I have enough to last until the end of the season. I'm getting low on this stuff, so I got to make sure, or I might have to go spend some money and get more. Get your predictions in, folks, so that Brad doesn't get upset that you didn't get your predictions in or make fun of you for not getting predictions in, and thus your scores are low. I don't know if Larry's still doing his 2-0 for the other team thing, or if he's abandoned that because they've been struggling, or he's just not submitting it anyways. But Larry will somehow let someone know what's up there. Let's move on to San Antonio. Orange County, fresh in the minds of Orange County players and Orange County fans. Orange County went to San Antonio, and looks like they should have never even gone. They should have just said, hey, we can see this game. We're not going to play it. We'll give up we'll forfeit. We'll give them the win. I think in that case, the goal differential would have been less than what it actually ended up being, because I think a forfeit's like a 3-0 result. So maybe Orange County should have done that for the goal differential, but obviously we don't want that to happen because it doesn't look good when a team does that. I'm going to assume there's going to be some extra motivation from the players. Even though that is probably the least important match in terms for both teams heading into the final match of the season, I think Orange County is going to take this one a little bit, to heart, and they're going to try and prove that was a hiccup and not a true result of what we can expect if these teams meet in the playoffs. What are your thoughts on that, Brad? Is Orange County going to come out fighting and playing better in this match at home?
I mean, with so much on the line, I mean, we're talking a home game still is possible. You would hope that Orange County definitely starts off early and scores a first half goal. With that said, we have had some struggles in the past couple games versus Oakland. Oakland, like Dylan said earlier, Paul Blanchet is a very good goalkeeper. And even though they're not in form, contrary to what I said earlier, we've definitely played down to their level on multiple occasions, and I could very well see it happening again.
Does Brad know that we moved on to San Antonio?
He's having an off night like we had in San Antonio.
Yeah, okay. I didn't realize. I don't know what happened.
It's okay,
there.
Brad. It's okay.
Anyways, it's okay. San Antonio.
It is one of those nights. I mean, yeah, if it's not obvious to the listeners already, like, I don't know what's going on.
It's one of those nights. No.
Greg's like, I'm never coming on the show again.
Anyways, let me give some expert analysis on San Antonio. We definitely need to play better than the 4-0 loss that we had last time. I didn't actually watch that game. I was at a concert. However, with that said, it's San Antonio. Ray, you did say earlier that they'd be satisfied with second place. They're not satisfied with second place in the West. And let's be honest, I think they're disappointed that they had the driver's seat for quite a while sitting in first place. And they let Sacramento get back into it. Both teams really lost a lot of points due to their own misgivings there.
So let me just sort of clarify. I'm not saying that going into this season or going into the final like couple months season that this is what their hope was. I'm just looking at it at this point of they pretty much guaranteed one of the top two spots in the West. I don't think there's going to be that much of a change. The top two teams are going to be there unless some miracle and some collapse happens. I'm looking at it as San Antonio probably just doesn't want to put in that much effort to try and get the one seed, being that A, Sacramento has a game in hand, and B, you're trying to avoid any kind of major injuries heading into the playoffs. I'm not saying they're going to, you know, just suit up all their 18-year-olds for the final matches. I'm just thinking they're not going to be out there as chippy, as fighting as hard, going through tackles and all that stuff as they would be if there was a better chance that they can't get there. I'm not saying that it's not possible. San Diego mathematically has a possibility of catching up to San Antonio. They have a game in hand on San Antonio as well. So San Antonio still needs results. They just don't need the results that they would need if they were in a tighter race for that second and third spot. That's all I was saying. I'm not saying that this was their beginning of the year goal to get second place in the West. Dylan, your thoughts on this match?
Well, we're not going to lose 4-0. And so when you perform as badly as we did, anything's an improvement. This is a chance to show what we're about and make some comment about what we could hopefully do a few weeks down the line in the playoffs.
What about you, Greg? What are your thoughts against
San Antonio? I feel like San Antonio won't be as tough as last time, especially because last game I feel like we didn't lose by as much as the scoreline said we did. Three of those goals came in a 10-minute span, which was just kind of chaos. So this next game against San Antonio, like you said, they may be less motivated than us. But again, every team goes into every game wanting to win every game. So every game is going to be a battle and just going to want to come out on top, you know.
Well, and at least the difference between this match and the 4-0 loss is we'll hopefully more than likely have Colin Shuttler between the sticks, which I think will make a big difference for Orange County. Really going into what we've seen, if Shuttler's not healthy and not able to make a run for the rest of the season, the playoffs, it's going to be really difficult for Orange County to succeed and make a push through the playoffs and hopefully to one of the later playoff matches, hopefully the championship match. So hopefully we see Shuttler in this match at home against San Antonio. And I think that would create a different result because it was a poor night in goal against San Antonio, and I think Shuttler will put up a better fight. So, yeah, Any other thoughts on this? Who is there any like one that worries or anything that worries you about San Antonio? I know I'm talking it like they're going to be, you know, a little bit easier than the other matches, but I know they'll still be tough. Dylan, what do we see from Orange County in the first 15, 20 minutes that let us know this is going to be a good match for Orange County? And don't just say scoring goals and not giving up goals. So we know that's.
Oh. I'm just not going to name names, but making saves is probably a great one. But I think ultimately the second half was the issue. Well, the goalkeeping was the issue in that match, but the second half was the issue. It's the business end of the season, and unfortunately we've been playing must-win matches for months on end just because we played so poorly for the better part of 15 months. And I know last season doesn't count for this season, but these aren't games where you can go 2-0 down or 1-0 down in 90 seconds and go, well, it's time to pack it on up, because we did that at the tail end of 2018, and still probably the most disappointing match of... you know, watched this team play. You have to have some fight in you. I think the team was reminded of that probably after the last San Antonio match. And like I said earlier, this is a chance to make amends for what happened. And this is a chance to just maybe give the other teams something to worry about, saying, hey, we went on the road, we put a literal child in goal, and we still beat Sacramento 2-0. Look what we did to San Antonio.
There we go. Brad, any last thoughts on this match against San Antonio before we get to our predictions?
Yeah. I mean, San Antonio is a good team. They're still fighting for a lot. I doubt they want to go out on a loss one of the last two games. This is the game that I was alluding to, that if we lose, I don't think anyone here is going to be truly upset. But to answer what you asked Dylan earlier, what shows a successful first half of the game, or just what are we looking for in the early point? I think it's got to be dominate the midfield again. You have to have Partidi, you have to have Kyle Scott, both eliminating opportunities for San Antonio to push the ball forward. And if those guys are having a good game and they're playing up to where we're supposed to be, then that's a successful first half for Orange County. 0-0, go to locker room, make your adjustments, maybe eke out a goal in the second half, and everything's going to be just fine and swell and dandy.
How about you, Greg? Any last thoughts on the San Antonio match before we do score predictions for the game?
Yeah, like Brad said, controlling the midfield will allow you to control possession. And if you control possession, that's less opportunities for the other team to score. So it's just pretty basic. Yeah. But other than that, I think you guys hit on the head.
Yeah, really. We need the confident midfield from Kyle Scott and Kevin Partida in this match against San Antonio. I think they're a big part as to why the defense has been successful this year, because they're helping eliminate pressure when the other team is putting pressure on the defense. We've seen it quite a bit where Kevin Partida and Kyle Scott drop back almost even on the line with the defense to help out in getting the ball out of there. And we've seen those confident passes that the defenders make to Kevin Partida and Kyle Scott, where maybe in years past we would have been like screaming at the TV for some of these passes that we're seeing, but there's some confidence there. We need to see that back from the midfield, from the defenders, and that connection between those two parts of the field, because that's what's leading to those really good opportunities on goal for Orange County. Let's get into some match predictions. I'll go to you first, Dylan. Let's get a prediction on this match.
To all. Milan Olasky, of course.
What about you, Brad?
You know, for everything that we said about this game, hopefully not going as bad as last time, I'm going to manifest something. I'm going to say 0-5, the Ray prediction.
You did 0-5?
The Ray prediction, you know, but I have a feeling I just jinxed it, because, you know, when you say it, it's like manifest, and somehow a win happens. When I say it, it's going to be like 0-8 is the final score.
Yeah, but when's the actual last time that worked?
Well, Larry,
I probably have the stats somewhere in there, and Larry did have his streak of 0-2s, and we did win like 9 in a row. So,
What about you, Greg? You have a prediction for this match, and who the first goal scorer is if Orange County?
2-1 Orange County, and Kyle Scott gets the first goal.
All right, I'm going to go 2-0 Orange County. Got to stay with my prediction like I did with Oakland. 2-0 for Orange County in this match. Let's go with a Thomas Amon goal as the first goal for Orange County. So I know we are hoping to get a guest on the show. I know producer Andy's trying to see if we can get any contact on this guest. We will just wing it from here, and if he shows up, we will bring him on to the stream. So what we'll do is we will get into some random – Dylan, no. I was gonna say, let's get into some random soccer talk. Who wants to go first? And I'm gonna tell you right now, if none of you have anything to say, then I'll just jump on and I can talk for this whole part of this whole segment. I guess no one wants to talk about any other soccer stuff. It doesn't have to be anything. It doesn't have to be about, you know, what's on my background here. It could be anything. But if you don't want to go for it,
no, right. I think you've earned at least like 30 seconds, you know, just have at it. I'll speak
no more than no more than 60
to talk about
no
it.
More than 60. Just get it out.
All right. I'm going to get my random soccer talk in right now. My boys, U12 team had 2 games this weekend. They won the first game. They drew the second game, and they are still undefeated in the league. So we're still excited about that. And they beat one of the better teams in the league. They drew against one of the better teams in the league, but we should have won. So still undefeated. We still are fighting hard. And we are the one team in the league that's not a true club team. We're still a rec team. So, Dylan, what about you? Any random soccer stuff you want to talk about?
Yeah, I actually just want to interview you about this really quickly. Orange County, obviously, drew at the weekend. About 14 hours later. A few Smithics and a couple karaoke songs later, your literal boy went out and his teammates drew 2-2. Which one was more disappointing?
The more disappointing one was my son's game that Sunday, only because I truly believe they should have won the match. We were up 2-1 and only for some poor positioning on our defense and a good counter attack by one of the quicker players on their team. They were able to get a nice quick counter attack and get a goal on us. It was a well-fought battle. It was against one of the Liverpool teams. So I was hoping I can get 2 wins against Liverpool over the weekend. We have 2 Liverpool teams in our boys league and plus Tottenham beat Liverpool. But I was hoping to go 2-0 against Liverpool this weekend, but unfortunately it was a win and a draw on that. But no, the boys fought hard. It's a good group of boys, and let me just say the Liverpool team we played, that they was a lot of shoviness going on, including two hand shove in the back on one of my players in the penalty box and no call made by the ref.
There it is, the trifecta of talking about a children's team, talking about Spurs, and complaining about referees. That is the race Mora we all know and love, everyone.
Dylan is the one that led to this. I doing my 30 seconds of soccer talk that you guys allotted me, and then Dylan wanted to ask a follow-up question.
I regret past it now. Asking. I've got nothing. Brad, would you like to talk about the seemingly imminent demise of the People's Club? And it's purchased by yet another
777
wealth capital firm.
You know, if everyone's going to be owned by a wealth capital, it's fun. You know, leave it up to Everton to choose the worst of the worst to get sold to. 777 has had one moderate success of a club and like 7 moderately disappointing failures, 2 complete and total failures under their portfolio. And yet, to be fair and honest, it can't get much worse than what's going on currently with Mashiri. So to be fair, sometimes choosing the lesser demon that you don't know kind of sounds more appealing than what you know doesn't work. So as an Everton supporter, you know, seeing a loss against Luton Town hurts, especially at home, where shouldn't have happened, and You know, if Luton Town never wins another game this season, they've already outperformed a lot of people's expectations. However, the victory against Aston Villa last week in the Energy Drink Cup definitely waters down a little bit of the sad, disappointing feelings there.
Let me, I want to get a question. I want to get Greg's opinion on this as sort of someone I haven't really heard opinions on some of this stuff before. This is soccer related. It's not anything that I've been talking about so far, but over this past weekend, we saw at Sacramento Republic, 13-year-old, is it Davian Kimbrough, made his professional debut for Sacramento. This is something I was maybe going to, I wanted to talk to our guest about just to get his thoughts on it, but he's not here. So I'll ask you, what are your thoughts on a 13-year-old making a professional debut in soccer, albeit second tier soccer in the US, it's still full professional. What are your thoughts? Is what, when is too young to be a professional athlete, Greg?
I mean, at 13, I was playing with Legos. So like, that's your comparable there. So like, it's very surprising to see this kid doing that. And I was just stunned to see Yamal in Barcelona. And now you see a 13-year-old kid playing in a professional division. It's just crazy to me. Absolutely crazy. Like, he's got pre-algebra and then he's got a game after that. That's pretty crazy to me.
I agree with you 100%. My son is 11 and I can't picture 2 years from now him being a professional soccer player. Dylan, your thoughts. What is too young to be a professional soccer player? Or are you of the mindset of if he's good enough, he should be there? I'm just curious in what people's thoughts are on this.
You know, I always thought that we were like 100 years past child labor. And if I were to make a book reference here, maybe like The Jungle, it's not exactly relevant, but what was I doing at 13? I think I had just finally stopped playing with Lego, but I mean, let the guy be a kid, realistically. There's still a lot to play for. Like, this isn't a team trotting out a kid at the end of the season for 30 seconds. Like, literally in the last match that you'll see occasionally, it feels not great to me. And it felt not great about Francis Jacobs as well, where it's just like, are we just doing this for the media side of things? Like, to set a record? Because, you know, like, ESPN FC will pick this up and then, like, some random European is going to retweet it. You know, Fabrizio Romano is going to, here we go, next thing up, you know, my unborn child signed to a professional contract with, I don't know, who signs young players? Like, probably Brentford or something. So I feel like we've reached the point where we've like kind of tipped into ridiculousness, but maybe I'm just being a hater. Brad, I know you wanted to chime in.
Yeah, I feel like 13, like, first of all, credit to the kid. He had a touch that like was kind of pretty impressive for someone of his age playing in a grown men's professional league. So clearly the kid has promise. He's not just like the owner's kid or friend who impressed in one club league game. However, at what point does it become we play young kids for the gimmick of saying that they were the youngest to ever do it versus the merit of them being there? And not that Davian, however you say his name, doesn't deserve to be signed somewhere or to be playing. Like, he's a kid still. I mean, he's choosing to do this. It's a choice to play in a professional league. Like, nobody slaveries a 13-year-old kid in a grown men's league. But, you know, I feel like at this point you're just trotting out a kid because you want to have a record. And, you know, hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully he ends up going to do amazing things in his career, because I want to hear all the success stories in the USL and all these kids going and playing in Europe. But he's 13. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, this was something that when Francis Jacobs was signed by Orange County that I didn't really think about until Brendan Cloutier brought it up and said he doesn't come into the locker room. He trains with the team, but he shows up after everybody else trains and goes home. There's no locker room. There's no hanging out with guys that are, and you know, Orange County generally tends to be a little bit younger, 10 years older than you, maybe on average. You know, Roro Lopez is 36. There's a massive age gap there, and it's not as problematic, but there is a weird level of like, he is always going to be on the periphery of things by nature of literally being a child. And is it great to subject the child to what is literally men's football? Is it great to subject a child to this level of work instead of like, and the specialization at 13? Like, obviously the cultural, he should not be hanging out with people that are 10 years his senior. There's so much developing that he's going to do in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years for him to be at a point like that, where, you know, there is a significant age gap there and maturity gap between Bryce Jamison and this kid. So it's weird.
I don't know, Greg, if you have any last thoughts on this topic, and then I'll throw in my last comment and then we'll get to our random thoughts.
Yeah, my last question is, what's the legality of that? Like, is that even allowed?
That's where I was gonna bring up like sort of this question, and I'll leave it as more of questions so people can debate this, talk about this. Is just sort of, you know, we all know there's like work labor laws for child labor and certain ages. I think sports fall in a different thing because it's more of a contracted worker type thing. I don't know how that works, but here's what scares me about it a little bit is, I don't know Kim, was it Kimbrough? I don't know him personally. I've never talked to him. I don't know if it's like this Todd Marinovich situation where it's like parents just like working a kid out his whole life to become a professional athlete, or if this kid truly loves the sport and this is his decision. And what kid at 13 can make a decision this big on their own? There's probably, you know, talking on all sides of what he's hearing and all that stuff. When does child endangerment become sort of a conversation on this? Because you're putting this guy in there, like Dylan said, with 36-year-old men who are going to come in sometimes studs first or come in with hard tackles, and you're putting a kid's health at risk in some of that stuff. And it makes it very, again, as a father of an 11-year-old that plays soccer, it's scary when you see 11-year-olds against 11-year-olds and what they're doing, let alone these grown adult men, which makes it a little bit scary there as well. Those are just some thoughts I had on that.
Dylan? Not to talk about this forever, but Ray, child endangerment is anytime you're driving with kids in the car. Second off, I feel like maybe we're being harder. Like, it sounds like we're being harder on the kid, and I think the issue is actually at the club level. If you offered me a contract to do literally anything that wasn't be in ninth grade at 13, I would have bitten your hand off for that opportunity. At some point, I think either the league or the federation, not that laughable that either of them would do this, but step in and say, hey, there's a framework for this to make sure that these literal children are being taken care of emotionally and physically, because so much of youth development it's obviously about training and developing skills, but it's also about growing and maintaining like a healthy relationship with the sport and people around you. And navigating that is, you know, we see people who are much older than that be taken advantage of by clubs all the time. There's not a framework for that here in this country. There's, you know, so much of this pathwork and this pathway is so new that I think that's where my apprehension comes about it. And it's not about whether or not he's capable, because he probably is, but like his long-term development and his health. And at some point there has to be some regulation about not giving jobs to literal children. And it doesn't matter if it's like an academy job or something, but like there should be a minimum there.
Brad, quick last thing, because I saw you putting your finger up, and then we'll move on to our random thoughts. And I think you're muted, Brad.
I'm muted. At the end of the day, he's a kid literally living the dream that kids his age are dreaming while he's still dreaming it. I mean, soccer is not something that He's taking a job because his family needs him to work at McDonald's or Burger King. He's playing a sport, and I feel like putting as much stress on this as we've put on is honestly a disservice, because if you gave me the chance to play soccer at any level at his age still, you know, I'd be happy to be playing soccer. It's a sport. I'm a kid. I'm having fun doing it. He just gets to play it at a higher level. And, you know, I think we got to put it on the club, not on the kid, of where he's at.
Well, not just the club, even just like Dylan was saying, the regulators of the sport need to do a better job of keeping safety. Let's get to our random thoughts so we can wrap this, up this show. I'll just throw my random thought out there really quick so you guys all have preparation for yours. When I was 13, I was riding my bike to Kmart to look for CDs. Dylan, what's your random thought?
I'm just going to have to sit on that one for a second, but yeah, I'm fresh out. You know what? Actually, I'm going to take this time to ask if anybody has any karaoke song recommendations. Generally, as a talentless hack, the funnier the better. You know where to find me. Thank you.
Yeah, because you're on social media, Dylan. What about you, Brad?
Well, because I'm holding in my hand something with a good karaoke song. I found what is a grail album for me, Styx the Grand Illusion. It's my dad and my favorite Styx album. Dylan, Come Sail Away. Please do that at your next karaoke outing. I think that would be a crowd pleaser.
Greg, random thought from you.
Yeah, my random thought is that my karaoke song, my go-to, is Tequila. It's very easy.
The easiest of the karaoke songs.
I kill it every time.
It's a tough one to mess up. For those of you that were tuning in to hear from our scheduled guest, unfortunately, we don't know what happened. We will work maybe to reschedule and get him on in future time. But that special guest or the guest tonight was going to be Coach George Koons from the men's team at Cal State Fullerton. So we'll work and see if we can schedule another episode for him to join on, because we want to shine the spotlight on some other local soccer, including the universities in the area when possible. I want to thank Greg for jumping on. Greg, I know you do the Instagram stuff. Is there anything else you do or what's the Instagram information if people want to follow you and hear more about your thoughts on Angels, Ducks, Orange County, SC, and all that other stuff?
Yeah, I just do the Instagram. That's it. OC Sports Coverage on Instagram. I try to post as much as possible. But yeah, it's just something I do for fun. And
everyone give Greg a follow if you can. Give Greg a follow if you can and hear what he has to say. I'm sure Larry will be interested in hearing your thoughts on Angels baseball because he's been a big unsupporter of Artie Moreno over this past season. I want to thank you for joining us this episode, Greg. You're always welcome back to join us in the future. As always, Dylan, Brad, producer Andy, and all the listeners that contributed in the chats and listen to us in the future or on podcast form, thank you for listening. This is the Orange and Black Soccer Cast. We are out.